Hi, this is Carrie, and welcome to Tandem Talks, a podcast meant to empower you to live your life your way.
And I'm Craig. Join us as we go deeper with entrepreneurs and their journey creating success in business and life.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Tandem Talks. I am super pumped and excited to have the one and only Ashley Quinto Powell with us today. She is local to us, so I'd like to think we're kind of neighbors. She's also from Wisconsin, and she has a really incredible lineup in terms of background. I feel like she is unrelatably diversified, just like we are. So we'll have a good conversation today. But she is the founder of My VA Rocks, which has taken off. She's a revenue consultant. She's also a speaker. She's all over the internet. You can find a ton of her talks virtually, but she's done talks for Pinterest, for Google. She has a TEDx talk you definitely need to check out. And what's most exciting is actually her book. She's got a book on executive motherhood coming out imminently. So in the upcoming couple months, check that out. But Ashley, thank you so much for being here. We're excited to dig in a little bit on your story. I know a couple of your businesses have really started and scaled a side hustle, so we've got a lot to dive into. But what's most exciting at this point? I guess we're in the late stages of summer in 2021. What's on your radar? What's hot?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I am bonkers excited to spend some time with you both. I admire your work. I have your book right next to me here at any point in time. I like to have, so you want to start a side hustle right there. And, you know, we're about, like, the kids are about to go back in school, which always feels like adult Rumspringa. And I spent so much of last year balancing running a company and pandemic parenting and administering virtual school that I put the kids in. I put the kids in day camp that went from 7:30 in the morning until 5 o'clock at night. And it was so beautiful to have all of that time that I hadn't had in like a year. And now we're in a very awkward stage where they're like home and restless, and we only have 1 week before they go back to school. So I am buzzing about everybody going back and having their own thing that is not destroying my house and eating me out of house and home.
Some consistency in a schedule. I feel that too. I think we're all ready for that transition.
I think our children are ready too.
I think they're very ready.
For sure.
No, well, good. And I know you talk a lot about motherhood and really all forms of your different businesses and your speaking. What has it been like to be a mom and a successful mom and one that helps other women? Like, what's your perspective on motherhood and being an executive or being an entrepreneur? What could you shed light on for a lot of our audience who actually have young families and are trying to navigate, maybe not even just mothers, but like parenthood and business? I feel like that's an important topic.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, mostly I chat with two kinds of people. One are women who, like you, are making it happen. You know, you have a baby on one hip, a laptop, resting at the kitchen table, and you're making, you know, you're making money and taking care of a family. And it's just a really talk to are often women who don't have children yet, but they want to, and they can't see how that would fit into their lives. And I think that's a really awful place to be. I remember the first time it occurred to me that I could have children and it wouldn't be like a disaster. You know, like if you got pregnant in high school, you would have been like, oh no. But when you're like 30, you'd be like, oh okay. I don't, then there are like there's a certain amount of women, especially in corporate and big cities, that just can't understand how they would even make a baby fit into their current lives. And I think that that's a real shame that they don't have great examples. So, so I think it's important to be a visible example in the companies that you're in, especially in leadership, to be sort of a really vocal person.
Yeah, I think it normalizes like the whole package, right? And the hard things that come with being a professional parent, as well as the blessings and all the good things and the balance that it provides. So I love that you have been so visible in that department and that you speak to it and lean right into the conversation.
Yeah, it's a fun conversation to have because babies are cute and moms are amazing. And actually, you know, one of the reasons that I like Madison where we live is it feels, and I've said this for a long time, but it feels like there are lots of women, especially moms, who are doing amazing things in their jobs, right? Like really making a big impact. And then coming home and everybody has a side hustle. Like everybody is, and I used to think it was because we don't have a commute, like other cities have a commute. And to some extent, I think it's part of our culture. You know, this is how Wisconsin entrepreneurship happens, that, you know, we don't necessarily get funding. We don't necessarily go looking for funding. People are starting all sorts of businesses like in their basements and at their kitchen tables and seeing what can happen in a way that's really authentically bootstrapped.
Yeah, totally. Well, and I mean, it's probably a movement that's happening all over the world. I mean, I remember growing up back in like the crazy 90s, and it was like not everybody had a business because it was, you had to pay a lot of money. It was manufacturing. I mean, you had to be a very clear expert in something before you could even pair off and do some kind of consulting. So yeah, there is a movement. I mean, that's why we wrote the book, is because we see the movement, but we see a lot of people messing it up, right? And getting in the game. And we talk a lot about helping people finish a side hustle, not just start one, right? Because there's an epidemic of people starting. So maybe just walk us through a little bit of your journey early on, you know, maybe a little bit about why you started a side hustle or side hustles, right? And then maybe a couple things that you feel like you did well that would be helpful for folks in general.
Sure. Well, you know, the first company that I founded in 2006. And it was not a side hustle, and it totally should have started that way. Instead, I dove in like head first. And like, I'm not kidding, y'all. I dove in head first. I sold my apartment. I like cashed in my 401k. I quit my job. I moved to Wisconsin from Chicago. And I started an e-commerce site for costume jewelry. And you know what? It was a great concept. It was tons of fun, but it was right before people were really buying fashion on e-commerce. And then my business just got eaten by the recession. And I was sort of spit out from that experience, feeling like, well, that was a gigantic mistake. I couldn't see, you know, I couldn't quite see that it had gotten me into tech and taught me to be a programmer, and it gave me a ton of experience. All I came out with was, well, I am not an entrepreneur, and I am going to work for someone else for the rest of my life. And I did that for a long time. But as you know, there's a point where like your entrepreneurial brain just won't stop.
Always that point is always.
Yeah, well, I at some point was keeping a notebook next to me, like at all times, that that had just business ideas, because I would come up with stuff. And it was before I went out on my own. I was working for my last corporate company. And I at one point called my mom, and I was like, "Mom, you know what Madison needs? Madison needs a very high-end nail salon." And I had this like whole thing planned where it would be equitable on both sides of the manicure table. And it was modeled after a startup-backed nail franchise in Chicago. And my mother, who is a brilliant businesswoman, said very sweetly, "You know, it's a great idea, but just because you don't know how to do nails or how to run a retail store, or really just anything about this business, maybe this isn't the one you quit your job over." And I remember thinking like, okay, yes, you're right. but when I left that corporate job. I had been consulting on the side for a little bit, and I was really excited to join a startup that was a wedding registry for art, and I was doing both. And I think the beautiful part of that is that I could take some time to explore what I really wanted to do. And I thought for sure it was not consulting, it was the startup. And actually it was the consulting. And I ended up not being super engaged with the startup. And so I got out of that and then started the networking group, The Dames. And I sort of think of everything as like a, you think of it like side hustles. And I think of it like, you know, I have 24 hours in a day and I really don't want to be dedicated to just one thing because that's boring. And also I'm a multifaceted person. So okay. I'll dabble in this over here and see what we can get going over here and wake up early to do this. And I mean, who watches TV?
Yeah.
not a lot from our side, especially when we were first getting going, that's for sure. So good. So you got several of those projects up and running. What are, and you kind of gave us some mistakes. I mean, for you, we call it like a front hustle instead of a side hustle, right? And I like the way that you're speaking. It really is more, it's not like job, then business, and then that's it. I mean, it can be more fluid than that. It certainly is for us at this point. But what are some big mistakes or classic things that either you've made or maybe you've seen people make? I mean, especially being part of the Dames, I'm sure you've run into a lot of people who are struggling or were doing well and then aren't anymore, or, you know, you've seen people overcome. Like, what are some maybe patterns that you've noticed that people could take away?
You know, one of the biggest things that I see both in my consulting clients and in the world in general is that people tend to be really precious about their offerings. So they go sort of in stealth mode and they figure out exactly what it's going to be and what the business is going to look like and what the branding is going to be. And they get all that really solidified before they take it to market. I actually have a hard and fast rule that I don't create anything until I've sold it. There's no point putting your time and effort into something that you haven't validated as being something someone will buy. As people will say, even, you know, they'll say like, oh yeah, I would buy that. But when it comes time to like pull out their credit card or write a check, it could be a very different story. Mm-hmm. It has been a goal of mine for a long time to write a book, but it wasn't until the American Family Dream Bank bought 100 copies of it, knowing it didn't exist yet, that it really became time to write a book. And that wasn't the smartest thing I've ever done, because I might have done it in a year where I wasn't like starting a business, but It was absolutely the right thing to do for that, because it's the kind of project that you can push off and push off and push off, but nothing like a deadline and nothing like a buyer.
Yeah. This is why Ashley is just a total baller. I remember texting you and you're like asking how the book was going. And you're like, oh, I'm writing a book. I've already sold 100 copies. And I was like, oh, the book's done. You're like, no, I haven't started it yet. It's like... No wonder you are a revenue consultant, because damn, that is awesome. And like you said, some serious pressure to like get on it and have that benchmark. Mm-hmm. And what we've realized writing our book is it would have never got done if we didn't have McGraw-Hill giving us deadlines. So we're so grateful that we had that time pressure. Mm-hmm. Although I think that's the plight of a writer, is it's like, in 5 years, I'll be like, man, I know so much more than I did back in 2020, 2021. I wish I would have waited to write that, but it's just part of it. And we're glad that it's out, and I'm eager to get your book. And I guess
you'll write another one.
What was
you'll
that?
You'll write another one. We'll write another one.
2.0.
Yeah.
They told us to write another one because they tacked a bunch of the content out, as editors do. That's their job. But they said, oh, just write a second book. And I said, I feel like I just birthed the baby. And I'm like postpartum, this is not the time to be thinking about another book yet. So I need like a solid year or two to just really soak that in and get over the trauma.
Yeah, and we've read it so much when it finally came and it was a final copy. I was like, oh, I don't want to look at that, you know? Put so much work in. I know you're going to go somewhere, but I wanted to just say, I'm seeing a real thread of like your stories and stuff of someone who takes action, right? And I think that, I mean, that's what you're saying, your quote, I don't create anything until I've sold it. Like, beautiful. I mean, intense, but beautiful. That would scare the heck out of a risk analyst like myself. But the idea, though, of just putting yourself out there and swinging, and it's like if you fail, you learn, you go to bat, and you're better off going to bat and swinging six times than still trying to figure out, like, is this bat right? Because you're not going to get a hit that way. And so I really appreciate that and respect that. I think that's definitely a theme that I'm seeing coming from your success and your willingness to just go out there and make it happen, which is what we've done even more of in the last few years. And it's like, you get rewarded. You just have to be willing to embrace the non-hits or the whiffs, I think. So.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But anyways,
it's a design thinking approach to, you know, like we're learning in like the innovations field that, you know, you start with something and if it works, great. And if it doesn't, throw it away and start with something else. And there's this exercise called, I think it's called the marshmallow game. It takes, you get like a piece of masking tape, maybe you get six pieces of spaghetti and some marshmallows, and you have to make the biggest tower that you can. And the group that really wins at this is kindergartners, because they don't spend a lot of time in a group like thinking and talking and coming to consensus. They just do it. And when it falls over, they say, great. Okay. Now we know it doesn't work. Let's try something else. And I think that's a really good lesson in our lives. Of course, there are things that don't work, but when you front load the risk, it's less of a risk. I biffed on something pretty recently. A client of mine told me that I needed to put together a mastermind class, and she told me exactly what I should charge for it, exactly what I should say in the marketing. And I said, great, well, let me get back to you in like a couple of weeks. And so I went out to the people that I thought might be buyers for it. And time and time again, they said, that's a great idea. I'm not interested in it right now. Okay, well, you know what? I put, I don't know, the amount of effort that it takes to write 20 emails, really copy and paste 20 emails, instead of creating something and really putting my heart and soul into it so that I could say, you know, from experience, this is not gonna sell. I'm gonna, you know, like, good try, everyone, but it's not gonna go. And I'd rather have it fail than any other time.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a powerful example and relatable that you still have some present day fumbles. That keeps it real. And I think that actually does help the audience in so many ways. It's funny, you can share all about the wins and the successes, but the minute you share a mistake, people lean in and there's just like a different level of enthusiasm about things we messed up. So no, I think there's a lot of lessons in that. And you know, one thing that I've always appreciated about you is you talk a lot about delegation. And I feel like as a mother and as an entrepreneur, as a, you know, co-author, all these things, it's so important to like take help, but take qualified help and learn how to delegate effectively. And I'm sure My VA Rocks is like a classic example that you could maybe insert some suggestions from that business that you're scaling. But you know, how do you delegate to the next level? Like, you're not playing Little League. You're kind of operating multiple tiers beyond where a lot of people are at, but like, how do you make the transition to learning how to delegate and like scaling that over time? Do you have any suggestions that could give people a thought process?
Absolutely. You have to think about the bigger picture and where you really want to be and spend your time. And the example that I always give of this is that I have an orange living room, and like it's the shade of orange you are hoping that it's not. It's like an autumn traffic cone, and that happened to my home because my husband was watching, like, up late watching a lot of home improvement shows, and I must have seen it somewhere and thought, wow. I would love it if my living room looked like a high school gym's locker room. And, when I took a job in Chicago and I needed him to stay in Madison, and be a stay-at-home dad, and it really take the reins for our family. And that meant that he had a dominion over like our house and our kitchen. And I knew that I could not be both places. Right? If you're going to exert like a strong opinion somewhere, you then have to be there. But I couldn't have been in Chicago and also had a strong opinion about what my living room looks like. He was taking over his space. That's how he made it his own. And I could either say, you know what, I don't like this. I'm gonna continue to be the CEO of our house. And instead, I got to go have this awesome job in Chicago and some incredible experiences and develop an amazing network. But I had to make a real conscious decision not to care so much about the orange living room, which exists still, because you know what? I'm back in Madison all the time now, and I still don't care passionately enough to change it to anything else. So, but I think that's something that women especially do, that, you know, we have this sort of classic feeling that like we're the only ones who can change the diaper on the baby. We're the only ones who load the dishwasher correctly. We're the only ones who get the right groceries. But unless you want to be constantly changing diapers and loading the dishwasher and doing the grocery shopping, you got to figure out how you just don't care about it. It's going to get done, and it's going to get done well. May not be the way you want it, but it's going to be fine. And then I think if you start there, extending it out to your business is easier and easier.
Yeah, that's super powerful. It is something I have had to work on, caring less about things that maybe don't matter as much in the long game or aren't going to make a huge impact. Or if someone can do it 80% as well as I can, awesome. That's a win. So something I have avidly worked on in my life.
Yeah, myself too. I mean, you talk about loading the dishes, and yeah, I mean, you can criticize anyone. It's easy to be critical about someone else's work, but when you're actually the one creating the work, it's a little different, right? You don't get to fix and plug all the gaps. And I think for me, learning how to let go is I think where you were saying, can I just let go of the fact that my living room is not the color that I want, and I can still be happy and still flourish.
Yeah, it actually isn't, funny enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't. Carrie and I have to do it. We should build a house someday. We're like, actually, that's a terrible idea, because then we're going to haggle over every little item, in the house. We'll be haggling. It's just not worth it. Let's just buy one and then fix it as we want to go when the other person's not looking. I'll come home and a random wall will be painted. It's like, okay. Because she knows if she asks me, it just won't happen. Right. Great. Well, I think some of these insights are really powerful, people. As you're wrapping up, what's anything that's on your mind, maybe that you've learned recently, or, you know, something that you feel like has been really helpful for you over the last year, that maybe you could share with folks that's been an interesting insight, or something you've been applying, or I don't know, anything else hanging out there that's really, really hot for you that you'd like to share?
I actually just made a list of the seven best business decisions I made when I started my off on my own. Yeah.
If
you'd like to hear them.
Yeah.
In no particular order. Okay. Yeah. Good branding photography is so important. Mm. My photographer's name is Amy Lawson, and she is brilliant. And she has made me look amazing on so many different occasions. But you know, the like cohesive brand photography and making sure that you have that as a big part of your brand is really powerful. I believe that there are two pieces of universally good advice, and they are: you need a breath mint because you just always do, and you need a VA because you just always do. And it was, you know, hiring a VA was certainly the best thing that I did when I started my business. And then the reason that I started a VA agency is because I kept looking over the shoulders of my clients and saying, I don't understand how you're going to get anything done. You're mired in admin and someone else can be doing this for you. This is not CEO work. Okay, so that's good. That's hire a VA is number two. Number three is hire an accountant. Or if you don't want to hire an accountant, you can hire a marriage counselor, but they are the same. Leave room for your practice to change. I think that there's something really amazing about being a business owner that you can sort of decide that this year you don't want to do a key piece of your business and just change it. And I think that that's like the most beautiful thing. I don't do sales execution for anyone else anymore. You know, I don't represent anyone. And when I started my consulting firm, I certainly did, but it was stressful, and it doesn't matter how much it paid. I just wasn't into it. The last time I did it, it was like giving me migraines, and there was so much pressure to perform that I was like vomiting in the bathroom. Okay. So leaving room for your practice to change. Of course, never create anything without a buyer first. Join a mastermind or some environment where you have really smart people around you who can elevate you. And, you know, one of the most powerful experiences that I've had this year, or in the last year, was when someone asked me, they said, what's your goal? And I said, well, I want to make $250,000 while only working 30 hours a month or a week. And he said, great. Is that a month? As in, okay, is that $250 a month? And I was like, no, that's the, what? No. But he thinks on a, you know, just like a different scale. And there are people that think on a different scale, and having access to them will help you understand what it really means to think big.
We're huge proponents of that. Huge proponents.
And then number seven is to maintain your network. That's it.
Mic drop.
Those are my seven best business decisions.
It is really surprising how someone you might have worked with 10 years ago or knew 10 years ago could be a major player in your life on a future project, or something comes up and you're like, oh, wow, so-and-so is really good at that. And I haven't spoken to them in 15 years, you know, and that's happened to me even yesterday. I was playing pickleball with an old tennis partner that I hadn't played with a sport with in like 25 years. And it was like, he just got a big hotshot job with Amazon. And I'm like, oh, you oversee development. Okay. We should talk. Right. So, such a great tips. And I love, the way that you deliver them in a fresh.
That's
way.
Awesome.
Oh so, yeah.
I got the full list here. And are the VA and the Mint one together, or are they two? I feel like the Mint should be its own, because I feel like that's really good advice.
I think it's just good life advice. I wouldn't consider that advice that are always true. You need a breath mint and you need a VA. And at some point, like when the next time I'm back in person, I will be distributing mints and saying that. And then
I love it.
That's a good, you could probably build some cool branding around that actually. One of the main reasons we wrote the book and we launched the podcast is to really help people stay focused on what matters most in life. And I'm super intrigued. We did not get to talk about it a whole lot. So we can give you a chance to riff here for a second, but executive motherhood, the name in and of itself is like super, super curious. And just as you were communicating today, I can tell you have a way with positioning things to make people think and push the way people operate. So I appreciate that. Thanks for being on. Thanks for sharing. And maybe I'll hand it over to Carrie or you to wrap it up. So.
Yeah. Ashley, where can people find you? Where can they find your content, your TED Talks, the book?
Sure. I am really active on LinkedIn, and I'm just there. I am Ashley Quinto Powell, and I would love to connect with your listeners there. I'm super open to chatting, and that actually probably is the best place. But you can always reach me at Ashley@ashleyquintopowell.com.
Awesome, and you can find a lot of her talks on YouTube as well as LinkedIn. And we'll be looking for your book come the fall. So thanks for writing it. I know it'll add value to us and our listeners, and just appreciate you being on. And I hope everybody enjoys the grind. Take care. Thanks for listening to today's episode.
Please subscribe and leave a review, and be sure to visit tandemconsulting.co/talks.